Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Ah!
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. Today, our live stream is titled Black Townships 2.0, The New Black Townships Movement. Black Townships 2.0, The New Black Townships Movement. Some of you, well, many of you, not all of you, but many that live in the United States, grew up in the United States, you've heard of the Civil Rights Movement. Some of you listening might have participated in the Civil Rights. Others, you know, well, you know, you were around during different phases of the Civil Rights Movement, and you watched things play out on television, you know, heard things on radio, things of that nature. And you know that, well, I'll let you read the history books on what it all involved. Many of you already know. However, there was the movement, the Civil Rights Movement, although included all colors of the rainbow, but predominantly black folks, African Americans, you know, that was the most visible person that you would see. Well, before the Civil Rights Movement here in the United States, there was also the Black Townships Movement. And this was made up of primarily former slaves and, you know, small groups of them. And they would get together with, you know, some family members, maybe some extended family, maybe some close friends to the family, And they would pool their resources and buy acres of land, you know, hundreds of acres of land in many cases, and start their own town. You know, some might have started with maybe 160 acres. Some of them managed to buy over 1,000 acres of land. Matter of fact, there are even records of people buying, the ones who went overseas buying up to maybe 2 million acres of land. But for the sake of this conversation, we're talking about here in the United States. So you had former slaves that got together and pooled their resources and started their own townships in places like Taft, Oklahoma, Redbird, Oklahoma. You had a number of towns in Texas. Texas had probably had 500 settlements and or townships. Illinois, Brooklyn, Illinois, which is known by today. Also, well, there's another town, Lovejoy, but I think Lovejoy is different than Brooklyn. Brooklyn, Illinois, founded in part by Mother Priscilla Baltimore. New Philadelphia, Illinois, which is now just a historic landmark place. Nobody's living there. I guess you can call it a de facto ghost town. But that was started by a guy named Frank McWhorter, also known as Free Frank McWhorter, started out life legally as a slave. But New Philadelphia was a township that he accepts. Hopkins Park, Illinois, which was founded by three black families, although his credit is just given just to one, and depends on what circle of people that you're in. But there were quite a few. And one even up in Alaska, Melvin Dempsey. Look him up, Melvin Dempsey. Melvin Dempsey, it's a ghost town now, but Melvin Dempsey established a settlement. And I'll explain the differences, the things between a settlement and a town. Because a town could be smaller than a settlement. But illegally, I'll explain it in a moment. But Melvin Dempsey founded a black town called... Dempsey, Alaska. Dempsey, Alaska. So there might be some relics of it now, some ruins of it now, but nobody's living in there. But I would like to make a visit to that place. Now, that was a black township that was established by black folk, by Melvin Dempsey. That was the furthest west here in the United States. Now, what's the difference between a black township or a town and a settlement? A settlement basically is, which is the easiest thing, if you're thinking about starting a town, okay, because you got settlements, villages, towns, cities, and, you know, then you got divisions of cities, you know, class A, class, you know, class B, class C, class D cities. But a settlement is a patch of land. There's no written stone on how small it can be or how large it can be. A settlement can be a half acre or acre that's unincorporated, or it can be 5,000 to 10,000 acres. But it's a patch of land that typically is unincorporated. You know, there's no formal political voting as we know. All right, so the first step in establishing a town is to get some land. And legally, they call that a settlement. All right. Anybody can do that. If you got the resources, you can do that. All right. So that's what happened with the Black Towns, the Black Towns Movement 1.0, Mount Bayou, Mississippi. That started out as a settlement, started by a former slave, and last name Montgomery, and now Mount Bayou is a municipality. All right. So step one is buy some land and establish a settlement or a compound, whatever you want to call it. But that's the easiest thing to do. Now, recently, and we talked about this last week, but we're going to put it up here again. I'm noticing a trend here. Last week, we talked about Freedom, Georgia, specifically Freedom, Georgia, the Freedom, Georgia Initiative. Two black ladies had an idea. They ran across some land in Georgia, not too far from Macon, Georgia. And they said, you know what? If we get some people together, we can pool our resources and buy this land. So they said, well, look, I'll talk to 10 of my friends. You talk to 10 of your friends. And out of that, they got 19 families to pony up some money. They bought 96.71 acres, or rounded off to 97 acres. Now they're up to 502 acres. And they're learning a lot. They're going to be sharing a lot. Go to their YouTube channel, and that's titled Freedom Georgia. And their website is the Freedom Georgia Initiative. Now, if you go to our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV, go to our Facebook page, It's My House TV, and you scroll down a little bit, and I'll post at least one video up there and their website. The link is on that our page where you can go to the website. Once again, that's It's My House TV. Now, not only them, but you also have another group that I know about. They have at least 110 acres of land in Georgia. And I don't want to steal their thunder or anything like that, but I'll have them come on and they can share that. But they've got 110 acres of land. I'll tell you this. It's just 12 of them. Just 12 of them. Okay, 12 of them got 110 acres of land. And the head person of that, I remember when he shared that in an interview, because I asked him how many people did he have. He said 12. He said, but you can do a whole lot with three. And then the Freedom Georgia people, that just started with two. So you don't need a whole lot to do great things. And, man, I'm pumped up. Now, there is, so you have the Freedom Georgia Initiative, new, brand new. You have this other group that I, like I said, I don't want to steal their thunder, but they also have land in Georgia and a significant amount at that. And then I ran across a couple. A married couple that they've either moved from West Palm Beach, Florida, or they're in the process of moving from West Palm Beach, Florida. And I have this on our Facebook page, It's My House TV on Facebook. They bought 41 acres of land. Oh, boy. So I don't know if they're going to, you know, share that with other people, but just a married couple, and all these are black folks. Okay. They're not making any excuses. They're not, you know, they're marching on their own land. 41 acres. Two people, a married couple. moved from West Palm Beach, Florida. And I got their video on our Facebook page, It's Miles TV. Check it out. To Montana. So they marched to the ticket office, got a plane, and they went to Montana. They got 41 acres that they can march on. All right. If you're going to march, make sure it's on your own land. Interesting educational video that they have. But check it out on there. So I'm looking at, you know what, there's a trend going on here. Because I know of another lady that I spoke, and I'm going to see if I can get her on here. Spoke to her maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. She moved from Baltimore, Maryland to Arizona. She's got at least 10 acres. Then there's another lady, there's a quiet movement going on among black folks, and I absolutely love it. They're buying, they're getting their own 40 acres. Some are getting a lot more than 40 acres, and that's good. Some are starting their own homesteads, and we're talking about big homesteads. All right. Some, I'm sure, well, matter of fact, is another couple that I know about. They have 20 acres, and they use it to generate income, Airbnb income. But hold on. Let's see. One lady out of Baltimore, she's got 10 acres. Another couple of ladies originally from Africa. But you know what? Then there's another. I got to call Mama AZ because Mama AZ helped me. I interviewed one of these people. It's another African couple. They bought quite a number of acres. Sorry, let's see. Mama AZ is good for two people. Then we have another couple that they bought 20 acres. Doing an Airbnb on that. I think it's a touch of Africa or a taste of Africa. Then they have the 12 people that own 110. That's four. And we got Freedom, Georgia. We got five. That's five that I know about. It's a trend. Because I'm sure there's several other groups out there that I don't know about. All right, so Black Townships 2.0, the new Black Townships movement. I also wanted to talk about safe parking. I think that's an emerging industry here in the United States, parking. And I don't know if he's listening now, but wanted to somebody to talk about reset housing. That's not a term that I coined. Somebody else said, I know he coined it, and I don't want to steal his thunder. So if you're out there listening, press one, and we'll let you explain the concept of reset housing.
You give me that funny feeling in my tummy. We'll be right back.
used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me, and however he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone, and I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called, and I punched in the code, and the dude said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth, and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this is it. I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, wanting to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday, and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do. But let me just call him back. So I call him back. See, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It says, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sobel from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back, and I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone. I call Chuck Sutton. I say, hey, man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I call Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the 6th floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw in the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduced myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I done had this four pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass, then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was, they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just say, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I'd never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night. And I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting. That it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up, no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida, I make $300. Then I go to New York, I make $750. Almost got $1,000. out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful.
all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back out the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house, and it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb: many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family gonna live in there? Is they gonna, I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times, if anybody likes to say, if anybody, people keep talking about how society is falling down today, and as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know: can anybody be saved? if I'm not around the usual. Will a man be spared who spoke the truth? Cause he never did abuse it. As long as I wanna be saved, how can I be free in my mind? As long as I'm a slave, is anybody here gonna be saved? Is anybody gonna be saved? Oh, say it again.
Everybody, everybody, everybody. man. People start to ask me why. Why I drink so much alcohol. And that ain't all. That ain't all. I say people are starting to ask me why. Why I never laugh. I don't laugh no more and I don't smile.